This is The Draft Room with Brian Lowe. The Draft Room is your exclusive look inside the NFL Draft.
Okay, so we'll move it down and give up a six.
Think you know who will go in the top 10, whose stock is rising, and whose is falling?
There's a lot of guys with good value on those spots.
Who will Mr. Irrelevant be this year? You'll find out as we go inside the Draft Room with Brian Lowe.
And welcome inside the Draft Room. You know, the next time NFL teams will be inside those draft rooms is 11 months, 3.5 weeks from now. But we are here with a wrap-up edition of Inside the Draft Room. You know, we came your way with a handful of draft preview shows here on Patriots.com. Had a really entertaining hour on Friday, recapping the first night and looking ahead to rounds 2 and 3. And here we are on this Wednesday, 12 to 1, 1 hour, recapping the draft, and we really want to hear from you. Email us at webradio@patriots.com. Call us on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. What I loved about the draft this, you know, last year and this year, the new format, you can digest the first round, then you can digest rounds 2 and 3. And now we've taken a few days to kind of look at the whole scope of the draft, all 7 rounds, what teams did, what teams didn't do, and get a sense of the good, the bad, the ugly, where teams missed, where teams hit. And a really entertaining 3 days, in my opinion, both from the perspective of the New England Patriots and the league as a whole. So we're going to talk about all of the above and delve into a few general topics, a few specific topics, and certainly whatever topics you want to talk about, ask questions about, give your thoughts on what the Patriots did or, of course, didn't do, and areas of the draft that you want to focus on, webradio@patriots.com. First, talking about the Patriots. On Friday, you know, we talked at length about the Patriots' first-round pick, Nate Solder, and about what they were, you know, what they were about to do on Friday with the abundance of second and third round picks that they had. And they still had a lot of opportunities that night. You know, they made some trades, they made some picks, and there were some very interesting picks. And as I've talked about on Patriots Today on Patriots.com is, you know, there's been a lot of focus on what the Patriots did not do in the draft. And we know what they did not do. They did not address the pass rush until round 6. With a smaller school guy, Markell Carter. And the question is, did they have opportunities that they passed up, or did they just feel as though there were no players to their liking at that position that they wanted to take? And to further that, there were no players at that position they wanted to take that were going to improve who they already had. So they go with Ross I. Dowling with the 33rd pick overall, and that was a pick that surprised me because I was very much thinking that they would make a trade with that pick. And the selection itself was a player that you don't really, that wasn't really rated at number 33. It was a bit of a surprise. But the philosophy clearly is cornerback, cornerback, cornerback. For the 4th straight year, the Patriots took a cornerback in the 1st or 2nd round. Clearly the guy they took last year, Devin McCourty, was a hit. You know, if you're looking at who's a hit, who's a miss, Devin McCourty, a hit. The years before that, with Terrence Wheatley and Darius Butler, at this point, not a whole lot to show for that. Terrence Wheatley spent 2.5 years, and he's gone. Darius Butler, 2 very up-and-down years. He was beat out by Kyle Arrington by week 2 of the season last year. So the jury, to say the jury is out on is still out on Darius Butler, maybe even a little too kind for him, because right now, with the Ross I. Dowling pick, the Devin McCourty pick, Lee Bodden, and Kyle Arrington, who looked pretty good last year, you know, Darius Butler at best is 5th. So Ross I. Dowling, if he has his health in order, and that was the big knock on him, you know, I think he's got the physical skill set, a tall cornerback with really good ball skills. I think he could come in and at worst be one of the in the 3 cornerback mix for the Patriots. And now who they passed on there in terms of the defensive ends, outside linebackers, Jabal Sheard, Brooks Reed, guys like that. That's really what's going to be what's going to be interesting to look at as the years go on. Ross I. Dowling compared to some of these other guys that the Patriots passed on. Then you get to what I thought was just an extremely intriguing trio of picks to wrap up Friday night. The fact that the Patriots took two running backs was startling in the sense that they took two running backs before they addressed what really was thought of as their biggest need. Then for them to take a quarterback before taking what was thought of as the biggest need was truly startling in Ryan Mallett. But then once we got to day three and we see them select Marcus Cannon, certainly a project because of his unfortunate health situation right now, a non-football health situation, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And then Lee Smith, who was considered one of the best, if not the best, blocking tight ends in this year's draft. I realized that the focus of this year's draft seemed to be bolstering running game production. And I think I'm even willing to take it another step further in that a potential renewed emphasis on hard-nosed, physical running game, being able to effectively run the ball from minute one to minute 60 of a football game, is in part connected, I think, to keeping Tom Brady healthy, upright, and fresh at this stage in his career. And I mean that both within the scope of one particular game, but I really feel, as I'm thinking about what the Patriots' approach seemed to be in this year's draft, there has to be a thinking that Tom Brady is the offensive leader of this team, and we want the ball in Tom Brady's hands as much as possible because he's the best quarterback in the game, he's a smart player, and we have good offensive weapons as well to catch the ball in Wes Welker, Deion Branch, Aaron Hernandez, Rob Gronkowski, and others. But there's got to be that balance. There has to be an ability to keep Tom Brady fresh for 16 games, and then they hope three or four more in the postseason every year. And now that he's going to be 34 when this season begins, there has to be a renewed effort there. And I think the draft picks of Shane Vereen and Stephen Ridley, I would be surprised. I think going into this year, there are going to be four running backs, and maybe five, but four running backs. It's been Jarvis Green-Ellis, it's Danny Woodhead, it's Shane Vereen, it's Stephen Ridley, and then potentially it's Kevin Faulk, or another free agent that we're not thinking of right now. I don't think Fred Taylor will be in the mix. I don't think Sammy Morris will be in the mix. And I'm not really that confident that Kevin Faulk will be in the mix either. If he chooses not to retire coming off his injury, I'm sure the Patriots will give him an opportunity, sign him back, and come to camp. But I don't know that there's any guarantee on that or any guarantee that he's on the team. So I'm really intrigued by what the Patriots are thinking here in terms of the running game. They have Algie Crumpler, who's one of the best blocking tight ends in the league and was huge for them last year. And then they have more depth, I think, on the offensive line. Although, with Matt Light, Logan Mankins, situations that are unresolved, Stephen Neal having retired, there are definitely some concerns as far as what that depth will look like. But there's no question about it. This was an intriguing draft for the Patriots. And I found it fascinating, as I do most years, to see their approach, see what their thinking is, see who they take and who they pass up and what positions they go for and what positions they pass up. So again, what I take most from this year's draft is the emphasis on efficient offensive running game. And that's what I take from it. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of competition they have when training camp comes around, and hopefully training camp is soon. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address, and our phone number, 508-298-0398. That is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Before I get to some other articles I've read about and themes from the draft, there were three second round draft picks that I want to talk about that I found really good for their teams and almost in some ways either counteracted what a team did in the first round or enhanced what a team did in the first round. Let's start with the Miami Dolphins, and I'm always interested in looking at the AFC East because I think from a Patriots perspective, hey, you want to break down the Patriots, but you really want to see if and how the AFC East improved itself, because let's be honest, that is what the Patriots are going after. You got to win your division. They've won their division the last couple of years. It hasn't worked out well for them in the postseason, but you want to see how you stack up. The Miami Dolphins, I thought the Miami Dolphins had an excellent... What are you doing there? What are you doing there, Kevin?
It was the Dolphin.
Oh, fine. I think the Miami Dolphins had a really interesting first, second round. They go Mike Pouncey And don't forget, the Patriots and Dolphins meet in round one. So this could be pertinent because I think the Dolphins took two players who are going to be starters right away on day one. Mike Pouncey is going to start at one of the three interior offensive line positions for the Dolphins. He was considered one of the safest picks in the NFL draft in terms of we can draft this guy and plug him right in. He can be an asset from day one. So I thought the Mike Pouncey pick was really good. Now, I'll be really curious to see how he matches up with the Patriots defensive line, you know, maybe right up against Vince Wilfork potentially, right on day one. But their second round pick, Daniel Thomas, the running back out of Kansas State, to me was the guy I was targeting for a Patriots running back pick on day two. I figured the Patriots would take a running back on day two, meaning rounds two or three, and he was the guy I was watching. And I think there are some similarities with the Patriots and Dolphins running back situations in that the Dolphins also may return without Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown. And the Patriots, we know Green Ellis and Woodhead will be there, but Falk, Morris, and Taylor won't. So there's going to be a lot of turnover. And I thought the pick of Daniel Thomas was fantastic for Miami, both in terms of the production I think he can have. I think he's a good fit. But I also think that at that time, when they took when Miami took Daniel Thomas, actually that was at the 30th pick of the second round, a sort of a run on second round running backs had already happened. Ryan Williams went to Arizona sixth in that round. Next off the board was Shane Vereen to the Patriots. Then Michael LeSueur, and then they took Daniel Thomas, who I think that was I think late second round was probably a steal for Miami taking Daniel Thomas, a tall, big running back, 6'2", 228. And if Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown don't come back, I think Daniel Thomas has a very good opportunity to be the featured back for the Miami Dolphins on that Monday night when the Patriots and Dolphins open the 2011 season. So I really thought that they had an excellent approach, bolstering that running game and looking to the next era of their running game for the Miami Dolphins. I thought that was interesting. Another team that we're always looking at, not in the division, but the Indianapolis Colts. How can you not like what the Colts did? Their first-round pick, Anthony Costanzo, I put up there, right up there with Nate Solder. I thought the Patriots would take Costanzo, actually, at number 17. The Colts get him later in the first round. You knew that the Indianapolis Colts needed a tackle because their general manager and president, Bill Polian, has been vocal about how he regrets passing on Roger Saffold at the end of the first round last year and taking Jerry Hughes. Roger Saffold went with the 33rd pick, the first pick of the second round last year to the St. Louis Rams, and the Colts took Jerry Hughes, who has not yet panned out. Maybe he will, but he has not yet panned out, a pass-rushing outside linebacker for the Colts. So you knew that, much like the Patriots with Brady, there has to be an emphasis from the Indianapolis Colts to keep Peyton Manning upright. And taking an offensive tackle, really one of the higher-rated offensive tackles at number 27, 26, 29, whatever it was in the first round, that was a great move for the Colts. He was really, if not the highest-ranked guy on a lot of boards at offensive tackle, he was certainly right up there. And, the Colts are able to take him at number 22. Okay, a little earlier than I thought it was as I was thinking about it. But, they take him there. Nate Solder, Tyron Smith, those guys had already gone. Gabe Kareemi was still to go. James Carpenter, a bit of a surprise, Seattle at number 25. But I thought Costanzo was great for Indianapolis in the first round. Likewise, listen, Benjamin Ejealana, smaller school guy, Villanova, an offensive guard, 6'4", 320, middle of the second round, I thought was a great pick for the Colts. I think they probably got the left tackle and left guard that will take them into this next and possibly final era of or final stage of the Peyton Manning era. And I think both of those guys were in the top two or three at their position in this year's draft. And I thought it was really important for the Colts, both for their running game, which has had its share of problems in recent years, and keeping Peyton Manning fresh and upright. I thought it was very smart for the Colts to go tackle guard in rounds one and two. And then another pick that really caught my eye in a positive way was Minnesota with Kyle Rudolph. There were definitely a lot of comparisons to Rob Gronkowski. And in fact, now that I'm looking at it, I believe Gronkowski was the, He was either the 40, somewhere in the 43 to 47 overall pick or 49 last year. Kyle Rudolph was the number one tight end off the board, 43rd to Minnesota. Thought it was a great pick, especially considering what they did in the first round. I think this guy could be an asset for Christian Ponder. I thought he was a reach in the first round, but I think pairing him up with Kyle Rudolph, and Rudolph missed most of last year, another Gronkowski comparison, I think it was a smart pick for Minnesota to go offense there. So talking about three teams that went offense in round one and round two, but they truly did catch my eye as far as picks that, you know, made sense. Just picks that made sense for those teams. Maybe they weren't the best players for every team, but I thought there were picks that made sense for those teams. We're inside the draft room here, Patriots.com radio. My name is Brian Lowe. The last of our six-part series here inside the draft room. We started at the beginning of April, here now in the beginning of May, recapping the draft. On ESPN.com, their blog network, Tim Graham does a really good job analyzing those four teams. I kind of like what ESPN.com does. They have eight bloggers who focus on a division rather than just one team or having guys. You know, they have plenty of reporters who cover the league, but Tim Graham does a good job analyzing the AFC East. And, you know, he goes through, you know, the draft picks, best moves, riskiest moves, most surprising moves. And with the most surprising move, he does focus on the Patriots. As he writes, some people would say Ryan Mallett, was a surprise. I didn't think so in the third round. That's the kind of value selection the Patriots are prone to make. Similar to Texas Christian offensive lineman Marcus Cannon, who tumbled into the fifth round after a recent cancer diagnosis. The biggest surprise to me was New England's decision not to address its need for pass rush help with the 33rd overall pick. With Pittsburgh's Jabal Sheard and Arizona's Brooks Reed on the board, Bill Belichick took Virginia cornerback Rashai Dowling instead. The Patriots then drafted running backs with back-to-back picks. And how do the Patriots figure they'll use all these guys, talking about the running backs? Well, yes, I was surprised that the Patriots took a cornerback instead of defensive end outside linebacker help. But the more I think about it, you know, it just doesn't surprise me. And I talked about this last week, how certainly talking in terms of the first round, look at the Patriots' history, that's not what they do. The projection of defensive end outside linebackers into their defense, what they want to do, clearly is tough enough that they're not going to make a risk, take a risky pick, and get a guy in who they just aren't confident can make that projection. It's too much money, and there's too many other areas a team can go in the first round, is how they feel. Taking Jermaine Cunningham in round two last year, Sean Crable in round three in 2008, that's as high in the draft as they're going to go for these kinds of guys. At this point, you got to be convinced that, you know, this year we thought that there were perfect projection guys for the Patriots, and obviously we were all wrong. By we, I mean anybody who observes the draft and the pre-draft process. I thought in the second round they would take a chance on one of these guys because it's just simply less risky in the second round. Whether it be at 33 or at 60 or 56 or wherever they ended up being, I thought that would be where maybe they'd pounce. But then the more you think about it, the combination of the development of Jermaine Cunningham, the adequate production, I'd say, that they're getting out of Telly Bantakane and Rob Ninkovich and those kinds of guys, and more sturdiness and consistency on the defensive line, maybe not with pass rush types per se, but the guys that plug the line and allow the outside linebackers to make their moves, I think that's what they're banking on. And maybe they have guys in free agency that they're targeting. You know, listen, Mike Vrabel, when they signed Mike Vrabel in 2001, can you believe that was 10 years ago? This was not a highly ranked free agent. This was a guy who had a, you know, relatively underwhelming tenure in Pittsburgh. You know, he was a third-round draft pick out of Ohio State. You know, kind of a under-the-radar guy all the way through, but Bill Belichick saw him as the perfect type of pass rusher for their system. Plus, he had those 4 years in Pittsburgh where watching the tape of how Pittsburgh used him and the production they could get out of him was an easier projection to make than college kids coming into the draft at defensive end. And that's just the reality. That is simply the reality. Finding the projection, making the projection, is difficult for the Patriots to do, and they're not willing to do it in the first round or really high up in the second round. So they were more than happy to pass on Jabal Sheard, Akeem Ayers, Brooks Reed, all these guys. Daquan Bowers, there's another one. Maybe they had him crossed out of their board because of injury concerns, but they also feel that cornerback, production at cornerback, sturdiness on the defensive line, space eaters, that helps the pass rush just as much as a, quote, pass rusher. So it's really it's interesting to see these patterns develop over the years. You hear Bill Belichick talk about it, and he's not going to go into depth about how they come to this kind of conclusion on pass rushers, other than to say, we looked at how the board developed, who was there for us at that time, we took who we thought was the right guy, the best player for our team. We took the best player on our board, and that's how they operate. So it's always very interesting to see how that goes. Another interesting element from Tim Graham is what he says in his file it away category. The two AFC East teams unsettled at quarterback didn't draft one. Each of the two AFC teams with clear-cut quarterback situations drafted another. It's really interesting. Now, Ryan Mallett for the Patriots and Greg McElroy for the Jets, if either one of those players sees the field in the regular season, then that is not what the teams are looking for. That's not what the fans are looking for. That would mean that something has gone wrong with Tom Brady and Mark Sanchez. But what's interesting is that the Bills and Dolphins were definitely in that category, and it was a big category of teams looking for a quarterback, teams that we all thought were looking for a quarterback. At this point, the Bills not taking a quarterback means Ryan Fitzpatrick right now is their guy. Now, supposedly there's a mystery team out there that is going to make a trade for Kevin Cobb whenever that moment comes, that teams can make those kinds of trades. But as of right now, Ryan Fitzpatrick is the guy. And as of right now for Miami, Chad Henne is the guy. And that could be a philosophical thing with this different type of year where, you know, the Dolphins and Bills weren't willing to take a quarterback early or really at all because it's going to be tough to get that quarterback ready to go. And maybe Chad Henne and Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Bills and Dolphins have already decided, are going to be our opening day quarterbacks regardless, because now we're at May 4th. There's just not going to be enough time to get either a rookie or a veteran ready to go for week one. But it's really interesting to see how they didn't draft anybody, and maybe it's a vote of confidence toward those two guys. Maybe they know exactly what their approach is going to be in free agency and or trades, or maybe they're willing to just take their lumps this year, and hey, maybe we go get Andrew Luck next year. Hard to say, but really interesting, as Tim Graham puts it, the teams that did have a quarterback set and ready to go went with a quarterback in the third and fifth round respectively, and the other two teams did not. You're listening Inside the Draft Room. We're going to take a break in a moment here, and we want to get to your emails if you have any, webradio@patriots.com, or call us on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. What surprised you about the draft? What didn't surprise you about the draft? And now that you have had some time to digest it, what really do you think about the Patriots draft? Grades are flying all over the place. A, B, C, D, F, all over the board. We want to know what you think here Inside the Draft Room.
He's the model of speed and precision, a machine that picks apart defenses. This is Wes Welker, part of a last-minute drive to the end zone. He's constantly on the move, and he moves fast. You're just as fast. Introducing Verizon 4G LTE, the fastest, most advanced 4G network in America. With it, you can download a song from VCast Rhapsody faster than the average play can develop. Upload your favorite photo in 6 seconds. Share 10 photos in a minute. Stream video like you're watching an instant replay through a window. It's that smooth, that fast. And it's the only 4G network that can compete with Wes Welker.
Yeah, let's go again.
To learn more about Verizon 4G, visit your local Verizon store for a live demo or visit VerizonWireless.com/4GLTE. Rule the air. Verizon. Coverage details at VerizonWireless.com.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Braves!
I need you.
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go Pats!
Indeed, go Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Inside the Draft Room, 508-298-0398 or web radio at patriots.com.
Welcome back inside the Draft Room, patriots.com radio. Brian Lowe here for 1 hour chatting about the draft that took place Thursday, Friday, Saturday of this past weekend. We hope you've been enjoying the patriots.com coverage of the draft. Going back to our pre-draft, draft preview type stuff on Patriots Today, PFW in progress, and inside the draft room. And, you know, draft talk can be really a 365-day-a-year topic, because I've already seen, the top 32 players for the 2012 draft. And I almost said that in a little bit of a mocking way, but believe me, I ate it up alive. I mean, I looked at that and I said, wow, this is interesting. Oh, how many quarterbacks? How many this? How many that? It's never too early to look at the next year draft, and it's also never too late to break down the most recent draft. So that's what we're doing here, and if you have any thoughts, webradio at patriots.com, 508-298-0398. A couple of things that crossed my mind, came my way, that I wanted to talk about. Len Pasquarelli from the Sports Exchange, CBSSports.com, wrote his article right after the draft about the offensive tackle position and how, you know, sort of trends in the draft. And he likened it to, or he compared it to defensive line as well. He writes that the left tackle spot has risen to near skill position status. The draft over the weekend certainly offered the latest evidence of the the importance of a position not all that long ago was regarded as a grunt-type spot. There were six tackles selected in the first round: Tyron Smith, Nate Solder, Anthony Costanzo, James Carpenter, Gabe Kareemi, and Derek Sherrod, the most since 2008. But the fourth year in a row, there have been four or more first-rounders. Teams are always willing to invest, it seems, big-time quarterbacks. Now it sure appears that clubs are more than willing to expend first-round choices to help protect their most expensive investments. And the 2011 draft marked the second year in a row that both Seattle and Green Bay used first-round choices for tackles. In all, 18 of the league's 32 franchises drafted at least one tackle this year. 10 chose a tackle in the first three rounds. So we know that the Patriots obviously were one of those teams, with Nate Solder coming aboard, probably as the left tackle of the future. I mean, that's what they hope. How that relates to Matt Light and his current free agent status obviously remains to be seen, and that will play out sometime soon, whenever free agency does begin. But we look at the teams that took tackles in the first round, and for the most part, these are teams that are not really in rebuilding mode. These are teams that are there right now. Teams that have a quarterback that they need to protect, and they're good teams. I thought it was interesting in that, you know, some years you look at tackles, I can't remember exactly the stat, but there's been at least one or two tackles in the top five of the draft for five, six, seven, some odd years running. And that wasn't the case this year, but when, you know, when you talk about teams drafting in the top seven or ten of the draft, usually those are teams that are not very good. And getting a cornerstone left tackle to start building around is very important. Think Miami 3 years ago with Jake Long. This year, there was no offensive tackle top five worthy. The thinking going into the draft was there were probably five first round tackles that were probably in the 12 to 25 range, maybe expand that a little bit. So the first tackle that went was Tyron Smith, number nine, to Dallas. Now Dallas had a really disappointing year last year. And their disappointment came from the sense that they were considered Super Bowl contenders going into the year and were hosting the Super Bowl. So there was a lot of excitement in Dallas about what that team could do. And they do have Tony Romo, who I think is a little overrated, but he's a top-tier quarterback in this league. That's the thinking. He's their cornerstone guy. For them to be where they hoped they were going to be last year, they went offensive tackle to help protect Tony Romo. The next offensive tackle on the board, right here in New England, Nate Solder. And it was really one of the top two or three needs, both long-term and short-term, and the Patriots go with a guy they feel will be able to protect Tom Brady for the latter stage of his career. And the Sebastian Vollmer, Nate Solder combination at tackle will likely be, or they hope is, the tackle combination for the next, you know, 8-10 years, certainly the duration of Tom Brady's career in New England. The next offensive tackle, Anthony Costanzo, as we were talking about earlier. The Indianapolis Colts are not a rebuilding team. They didn't take Anthony Costanzo as a guy to start building their team around. They needed reinforcements at tackle to help protect Peyton Manning, keep him fresh for the final stages of his career. Seattle at number 25. Now, this was a surprise, both the player and the position for Seattle. They go James Carpenter. No one had James Carpenter in the top five tackles this year. He was 6'7", 8". But Seattle takes him in the first round ahead of some others. And now Seattle's quarterback situation is up in the air because Matt Hasselbeck is an unrestricted free agent. And this is a team that was maybe the biggest joke of a playoff team based on regular season record in NFL history. But they got to the postseason. They won a game, a big-time game. And maybe their expectation is they bring back Matt Hasselbeck, and they feel that they're a contender in a weak division, and James Carpenter is the guy that protects Matt Hasselbeck for the latter stages of his career. Then we go to Chicago, number 29, Jay Cutler. Huge investment they made 2 years ago in Jay Cutler, the quarterback of their present and future. Been up and down for him, and we saw what happened in the NFC Championship game last year, where Joe Flacco. Jay Cutler got a lot of flack for sitting out much of that game with an injury. Now, whether you think it was legit or not, the fact of the matter is he had an injury. They picked Gabe Kiremi to be the left tackle for the final stages of the next and future stages of Jay Cutler's career. And then Green Bay, the Green Bay Packers, the Super Bowl champs with one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the NFL, they go offensive tackle too. Derek Sherrod at number 32 to protect and keep Aaron Rodgers healthy and upright in the next stages of his career. Fascinating to see the offensive tackles that went in the first round and the teams that took them. I think offensive tackle has one of the highest percentage of first round hits in the NFL, in the NFL draft. There are a lot of Look at running backs, look at wide receivers, look at cornerbacks, look at defensive ends. Among those positions, those are tough positions to project, and just look at first-round history for the analysis of that. But offensive tackle, I feel like, while it's not 100%, there's a better chance that an offensive tackle you take in the first round is going to pan out than a lot of other positions. And I think we saw teams this year take offensive tackles to step in right away and to be blindside protectors for marquee quarterbacks in this league. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Jay Cutler, Tony Romo. These are good, legit quarterbacks in the NFL, and their teams just took new left tackles. That's got to make these quarterbacks happy. Probably, in my opinion, more so than an elite wide receiver makes a quarterback happy. I think taking one of these tackles is huge for these teams, and it certainly crossed my mind as I was watching this. And you know, just going back to Len Pasquarelli, who writes, increasingly, teams require big bodies. Even if those guys don't always make more than a modest ripple in the stream of public consciousness, the only position with more first-round calls on Thursday night was defensive end, guys who are paid to chase after quarterbacks. Getting after the passer has become an obsession in the NFL. Going after the escorts who keep rushers from doing so hasn't quite reached that point yet, but it's getting closer. Costanzo acknowledged, it's not such a no-name position anymore. And Len Pasquarelli writes, the first round on Thursday erased another layer of anonymity. Very interesting stuff, the offensive tackle position in the NFL. Inside the draft room here, webradio at patriots.com is the way to get in touch with us. And, you know, another take that I saw on NFL.com, Pat Kerwin, an NFL.com senior analyst, who is very plugged in, very much plugged in, because he, you know, used to be an NFL executive. And knows a lot about how the NFL works, how the draft works, and knows a lot of the dynamics of different teams. The headline of his story from Monday or Tuesday, head-scratching drafts for Pats and Seahawks? Think again. People tend to look at drafts shortly after the final pick is made and draw conclusions about the decisions made by clubs. It is way too soon to criticize teams such as the Seahawks and Patriots for their picks. Now, to Kerwin's point, the Seahawks and the Patriots have taken a lot of criticism in recent days about their drafts. Seattle, certainly because of James Carpenter and not addressing quarterback, passing on a lot of guys. And then the Patriots for not taking pass rushers, passing on a lot of guys as well. As Pat writes, he talks about the running back position. The pass rushers New England has taken recently, like Sean Crable and Tyrone McKenzie, never really worked out. Let's wait and see how much Jermaine Cunningham has developed and what happens when veterans are available. Most people on the outside looking in at a draft only see it on a need basis. Unless you have the same information as a team, you really can't have a value board. Either way, these players haven't even stepped on the field yet, which makes it premature to assume how they will perform. And that's really what it comes down to. You know, I took a look at, you know, 2008, 2009 drafts in the NFL and just getting a sense of, you know, who got picked where, did they pan out, did they not? Boy, is it a crapshoot. I mean, it really, really is. From number one, yeah, there's a better chance, a higher percentage chance that a guy taken number one overall in the draft will perform better than, you know, I'll use 199, for instance, Tom Brady. There's a better chance of that. But you look from 1 through 32, or back, you know, earlier, 1 through, you know, 30 or whatever, and it is not easy. It is not easy for these teams to project players. And you need several years before you can really analyze it well. You need to see how these teams actually do on their teams, in their systems. And you can't do that right after the draft. You can't do that just after rookie camp or training camp. And you can't even do it after year one or even year two. It's got to be after a few years. And I'll tell you what, with the Patriots, there's some good examples. You know, after year one, I think people were very optimistic about Darius Butler. After year two, not so much. Let's give it another year and see what the real analysis is of Darius Butler. Now, he might not really get much opportunity with who the Patriots have at cornerback. But you've got to give it some time. We really have to give it some time with a lot of these teams and figure out not only if the players that were picked were good, but look at who was picked after them and whether teams made the right projection based on who was available. Did they pass on guys who would have been better fits? did they take a guy who was the right fit? And just, you know, analyzing it in that way, not just the production in year one or how a player was used, but really in relation to other teams, other players that were drafted, and where guys sort of tend to fit in. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address. You can call us on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Interesting with the Patriots, back to the Patriots, to look at some of their later round draft picks. And they are pretty adept at drafting guys who are, to say they're under the radar, is almost giving too much credit. Guys that only they have heard of, it seems. You know, think about Julian Edelman. You know, Matthew Slater. I don't mean that really they were the only ones that heard of these guys, but players who were really not even projected to be drafted at all. And I look at Malcolm Williams, who they took in the seventh round this year out of TCU. He himself was stunned that he was drafted. The guy barely played on defense. He's a cornerback, but he barely played on defense. He was a special teams guy. Now, think about it this way. Most rookies, not all, but most rookies that come into to the NFL, they're going to have a special teams role right off the bat. I mean, Ryan Mallett probably won't. Nate Solder probably won't. But Ross Idaling, Shane Vereen, Stephen Ridley, Lee Smith, if these guys if these guys make the team, are on the 53-man roster and then are on the 45-man roster, they're going to play special teams. To get from the 53 to the 45 on any given week, they're going to need to play special teams. So think about what that transition is like for a lot of players who maybe are not special teams heavy in college. Now, when I say special teams, I'm not just talking about the return game. I mean, yeah, you take a guy who's involved in the return game, that's a glamour position, the return. An actual kicker and punt returner. That's more glamour compared to, you know, being on what used to be called the wedge or gunners and all that. These are not glamour positions, but rookies from the second, third round and beyond, if they're going to make a team and contribute, it's going to be on special teams. But that transition can be hard from going from, you know, being an offensive juggernaut or being the star offensive guy on a team in college to having a heavy special teams role. A lot of players probably are not fond of that, and they've got to suck it up or they're not going to be on the team. Well, think about Malcolm Williams, who was virtually a special teams only guy. He's going to come in, you got to figure, guaranteed, with the right mindset. He knows that the chances of him contributing as a cornerback, as a rookie, if not throughout his whole career, are virtually pretty slim. But if he has what it takes, both physically and mentally, to be a key core special teams guy, the Patriots look for those guys and keep those guys. You know, Matthew Slater, anytime you see Matthew Slater appear in a game on offense or defense, you're probably thinking, guys must be hurt. You think about, you know, Willie Andrews, guys who were special teams guys earlier, you know, in college and then during their NFL careers. Well, Malcolm Williams has an opportunity to come in and be a special teams beast because you know he's going to come in with the right mentality. I was very intrigued by that pick, not to go overboard and not to get too in-depth on a seventh-round guy, but that was interesting. Certainly interesting to see the Patriots take a guy who is really special teams only, so to speak. Was very interesting to me. We've got about 15 more minutes, a few minutes left, and we can get your thoughts if you have them. Webradio@patriots.com. Call us on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. We are going to take another break here inside the draft room and come back with some final thoughts on the draft, on the Patriots, on the draft as a whole, as we close out inside the draft room.
He's the model of speed and precision, a machine that picks apart defenses. This is Wes Welker, part of a last-minute drive to the end zone. He's constantly on the move, and he moves fast. You're just as fast. Introducing Verizon 4G LTE, the fastest, most advanced 4G network in America. With it, you can download a song from VCast Rhapsody faster than the average play can develop. Upload your favorite photo in 6 seconds. Share 10 photos in a minute. Stream video like you're watching an instant replay through a window. It's that smooth, that fast. And it's the only 4G network that can compete with Wes Welker.
Yeah, let's go again.
To learn more about Verizon 4G, visit your local Verizon store for a live demo or visit verizonwireless.com/4GLTE. Rule the air. Verizon. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Now's your chance. Hit a Philo inside the draft room on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398.
We're winding down here inside the draft room for this particular show and the 2011 series of Inside the Draft Room shows. A six-pack, so to speak, of Inside the Draft Room shows, previewing four of them, more previews. One of them was during. And then this one here, breaking it all down. Web radio at patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Just to touch real quick on one of the other sort of interesting, intriguing, and really sad elements of the draft was Mark Herzlich. You know, if you recall, 2 years ago, if he had come out of the draft as a junior, he would have been a first-round pick. Some thought top 15. The linebacker out of Boston College, just a total package. And he decides to come back for his senior year, diagnosed with cancer, has an arduous, grueling rehab and process to return. He misses one entire college season, was told in a lot of ways, listen, don't even think about playing football. You got to survive this. Let's focus on that. Well, he survives it. He comes back, plays for Boston College last year. Certainly not nearly the production and explosiveness that he had earlier in his career, but had a solid season nonetheless. Had, you know, what seemed to be a shaky pre-draft season, combine, pro day, was not considered anywhere close to being where he was before he had cancer, although he was certainly seen as a final day draft pick, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round. And he goes undrafted. And I was surprised by that because I thought that the physical package that he could bring as a football player was enough to take a flyer on. And just how good of a story. You know, I know how it works in the NFL. Teams aren't drafting players for good stories. But what a great story that would have been for whatever team that drafted him, especially where the NFL is, you know, needs every good story can get right now. And I was surprised that he fell to where that he fell out of the draft. And now it's going to be really interesting. He was drafted in the UFL the other night, which I'm not fully up on exactly what it means, on where, you know, signing contracts and all that. And I know that if you sign a contract in the UFL, you're bound to that for a year or for that season. It'll be interesting to see what comes of Mark Herzlick, who obviously was hurt big time by the fact that there's no undrafted free agency right away this year. If there was, you know that Mark Herzlick certainly would have been signed by someone. And in fact, I would have been surprised if there weren't dozens of teams banging down the door to try to get him in undrafted free agency. That's not around right now. So, you know, the timing of the lockout and when free agency will begin has a huge effect on undrafted free agents, especially those like Herzlick who did get it, who are getting a chance in the UFL. Does he take that opportunity in the UFL where he knows he'll be able to play, show scouts what he can do, maybe generate some, you know, professional tape that teams can see, and then next year get into an NFL camp? Or does he, you know, say thanks but no thanks to the UFL and take his chances in undrafted free agency whenever that begins in the NFL? Remains to be seen. It'll be interesting to see. And certainly I think a lot of people are rooting for him because of what he's come back from and what a great story it'll be if and when he takes the field in the NFL. And then we can also talk about Marcus Cannon. I think that'll be a great story as well. I mean, this guy began chemotherapy, I think, on the day the draft began. And, you know, you go through your entire college career, most of the pre-draft process in one sort of physical state. Then you find out you have cancer. He drops from, say, the second round to the fifth. And I think when all is said and done, and I hope that he's a steal for the Patriots, because that would mean he got all of his cancer behind him and he can get back to playing football. And this is a big boy, 350 some odd pounds. You think about what he could do on the Patriots offensive line, wouldn't be too bad. We've got an email here to get to Alex from Philly, who's you know, chatting a lot about the PFW guys. They can get to the bulk of that email tomorrow. But he says, longtime listener, first time emailer, I know everyone is angry and upset that we didn't get a pass rusher, especially since Robert Quinn fell lower than expected. I also know that people are looking everywhere for someone to blame for all this. Let's face it, to expect that Bill would do anything other than trade down, pick up value, meaning mediocre picks, and get picks for next year is nothing more than a pipe dream. And by the reaction from fans, it sounds like Patriot Nation had been inhaling during the entire... I'm not sure exactly what he's saying here. But basically, he's angry. People didn't get a they didn't get a pass rusher. But maybe this will be the year that teams simply won't throw the football. That will solve all of our pass rush problems. Keep up the good work. So basically, his theory is they didn't get a pass rusher. Maybe it's not because they didn't like any of the pass rushers, but because teams will be focused more. There'll be a trend going back to running the ball, and that will help solve the pass rush needs. They simply won't need a pass rusher. Well, it's an interesting take. I think we're still going to see it being a passing league, but as I talked about earlier, from a Patriots standpoint, I think running the ball might be more of a priority this year. Maybe not more of a priority than passing will be, but the balance will be there, and that's what they're going for. As far as the Patriots offense, maybe other teams are doing that too. As far as the Patriots defense goes, they're going to continue to do what they do, which is probably not have an elite double-digit pass rushing guy, sack artist. They need to improve third down defense, but I think their thought process is probably if we can improve our cornerback and secondary play or continue to build off of what we had last year, that will help the pass rush just as much as a pass rusher will help. I think if they can get a little more experience from the guys from last year and more productivity from this group of defensive linemen, defensive ends, and I said on Friday, and I've said in the past that I think that they have good quantity, but I'm not sure if the quality is elite level as far as their defensive ends. And that combined with injury situations with Ty Warren and Mike Wright really puts a heavy question mark on the crop of defensive ends that the Patriots have. Now, don't forget that Vince Wilfork played a lot of defensive end last year, and they have some other candidates that can move inside at defensive tackle. So I think, you know, it just becomes more and more clear every year that pass rush for the Patriots is an 11-person situation. If they wanted elite pass rushers, how many opportunities in the draft and in free agency have they had? Who knows if they really did pursue Julius Peppers last year? But my guess is they didn't pursue him all that much. And who knows what they really thought of the pass rushers this year, including Robert Quinn. Clearly, they didn't think that much because they had so many opportunities at 17, at 28, and in potential trade-ups to get these guys. Their theory, their philosophy as far as the defense and the pass rush is, we are going to build guys and develop guys later in the draft. We are going to occasionally get an NFL unrestricted free agent, whether it be a big money guy like Adalys Thomas, I know he didn't really pan out, or lower tier guys like Tully Bantakane out of San Francisco, coming back from San Francisco, or mid-round draft picks, under-the-radar draft picks like Jermaine Cunningham. That's the approach they take. We can't be surprised by that. So as we wrap up here inside the draft room for 2011, the themes we have to take from this, and let's think about this over the next 11 months before we come back with Inside the Draft Room 2012 version. We are going to see the list of outside linebacker types, defensive end types in next year's NFL draft, and we're going to be talking about who is a perfect fit in the 3-4 for the Patriots defense, who the first-round caliber guys are, and all that. Take that, look at it, rip it up, and throw it away as it pertains to the Patriots. They won't be taking those top-end guys. They just won't. Maybe next year it's a true defensive end, not a pass rush, but like a Richard Seymour, a Ty Warren type, a true elite college defensive end who projects to play defensive end in the pros. Maybe it's going to be an elite wide receiver next year. And don't forget, the Patriots have the New Orleans Saints first-round pick as well and the Oakland Raiders second-round pick. Just as you follow the college football season this year, as you start thinking about the 2012 draft, think about defensive ends, true defensive ends, and wide receivers. Because I think those might be the positions that the Patriots are going to go for. They're not going pass rush. They're not going outside linebacker. We just got to live with it. That's just how they operate. But it is fascinating to see what the Patriots do from rounds one through round seven and how it relates to other NFL teams, trades, what other NFL teams do. It truly is fascinating. I'd like to thank Kevin Collins and Jason Dvorkin for their help over this series of Inside the Draft Room, which really was a lot of fun. Great to bring you my insight, have an opportunity for me to kind of talk about what my thoughts are and what the Patriots might do and then break it down. And then hear what you had to say as well, Kevin.
Just make noises.
No, I know. I make noise. That's what I do for an hour. Make some noise. But my thanks to everyone who emailed and called in. Also, the guests that we had, Rob Rang, Chad Reuter, Chris Price, and I know I'm forgetting a few, but our many thanks to them as well, and certainly to everybody who listened. And we know the passion is out there for the Patriots and the draft, and so we appreciate everybody who has listened, emailed, and called here inside the draft room. PFW in progress, they don't go anywhere. Tuesdays and Thursdays, you can email them at webradio@patriots.com. Call them on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Those guys are entertaining as always. They're not going anywhere. They'll be back at noon tomorrow. So, my thanks to everybody inside the draft room. Let's hope it'll be back next year. The Fantasy Lowdown, let's hope it'll be back next year as well. And we'll see you next time here on patriots.com radio.
Trails to you till we meet again.
This is John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.